It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, attorneys at law, and you can also call our local numbers with a question.
That would be 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Last week.
Oh, hold on. You got a different microphone than usual. Okay, there you go.
Are we?
Yeah,
there
now
we go.
Now I got
all
you.
All right. Good, good morning. Mm-hmm. Ben, last week, Wes and I talked about some of the issues that concern our senior citizens, our elder clients, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so we touched on that. There's a lot to talk about in that area of the law known as elder law. And we will continue that discussion today and maybe probably into next week as well. It's been a while since we've talked about some of these issues. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about last week is just, you know, Ben, the cost of getting older. The cost of a nursing home facility now can be anywhere in the range of, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And of course, most folks just are not able to afford that kind of expense. And one of the things that they're most concerned about many times is talking about their home place.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the home that that many of us live in is it seems to be one of our most valuable assets,
right,
if you will. Okay, mm-hmm. Many times these clients have homes that they've lived in for most of their life. They are paid for. They might have a small equity line or something like that on there,
mm-hmm.
but generally speaking, they usually are paid for. People take great pride in being able to come in the office and say, oh, yes, I have my house, and there's no mortgage on this house.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of our planning begins at that level.
Right, right. But then what happens?
Well, you know, the questions that we get with regard to, you know, the long-term care expenses, you know, really do center around the house first and foremost, and then we, you know, look at mm-hmm. other issues such as any savings that someone might have, so on and so forth. We then have to analyze the situation, Ben, as it relates to whether we're just dealing with a single individual
mm-hmm.
or we're dealing with someone, you know, who's married.
Right.
You know, this could be someone who, on the first hand, who you know, lost their husband or wife and they're alone, but now they're needing a higher level of care. It may be, can be provided in the home. They may have had, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, a fall.
Right.
It could have been an accident. They could have had a stroke. I mean, it could have been, you know, many things. So we have to analyze the work that we would do for the individual based on whether it's a single person or married, because when they're married, a different set of rules applies that's basically referred to as the community spouse resource allowance. So let's kind of walk through the situation with regard to a single individual.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had, you know, a single individual who cannot live in the home place anymore, normally we're working with the children at that point in time.
Right.
Or whoever the attorney in fact is under the power of attorney. Normally the kids. Hopefully we have a good solid power of attorney in place that allows the children or child to sign all the relevant documents for the mother or the father,
mm-hmm.
Under that scenario. In the event we don't, then at Harbell and Collins, we have to make a determination as to whether the individual has the capacity to enter a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Many times, you know, we run into a situation where either Cecil or I, you know, meet with the respective client, and we make the decision that they don't have that capacity.
Right.
And that's...
You're called in too late.
Called in too late. But, you know, if you're dealing with a situation where maybe there's a stroke,
mm-hmm.
Or if there's an accident, something like that, and they're mentally just fine, then power of attorney is usually no problem. In the event it's a close call, well, Cecil and I normally don't make the judgment call. We get the doctor involved.
Right.
We see what the doctor says. Is this person able to make, you know, informed legal decisions with regard to the person who's going to handle their, you know, his or her affairs? So that's the first thing, you know, that we do. And then we really look at the real property that the person holds. So if it's the standard scenario that Cecil set forth just a moment ago, when you have, you know, a home place that's basically paid for,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little bit of savings. What we look at in that particular situation is that, you know, that individual can sign a document called an intent to return home,
mm-hmm.
which makes that home place a non-countable asset for Medicaid.
Right, right.
So that takes the home place off the radar screen for countability, making the determination as to whether this person's eligible for Medicaid.
At least for now.
At least for now. Mm-hmm. Now, don't turn the radio off now because
yeah.
we've got more to go about
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
The rest of the story,
that's
right?
That's right.
So, you know, basically, you know, what we're looking at when we're talking about taking assets off the radar screen is that, you know, Medicaid is means tested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get Medicaid just because you paid into the system for years.
Yeah.
You get Medicaid under long-term care, which is a special subset of many different categories of Medicaid based on whether you have less than $2,000, just $2,000 of countable assets.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the home place is going to be worth more than $2,000 if it's not taken off the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
So we deal with the home place first, and then we deal with the liquid assets next. Now, back to the home place briefly. If you sign the intent to return home, you become eligible for Medicaid, everything seems fine, Medicaid's paying the bill month after month after month after month, mm-hmm. over and above whatever income you're receiving, like Social Security, retirement, those type things. And then upon the death of the person who's receiving the Medicaid,
right.
because nothing else was done but an intent to return home was signed, a lien is then placed on that home. A letter is sent by the Division of Medical Assistance, their office is in Raleigh,
mm-hmm.
stating how much they paid for this person over the years, and they want that money out of the home.
Right, right.
And so the family is then forced to either sell the home or do nothing and wait for the state to then hire local legal counsel and force a sale of
right.
the home.
Right.
So how do we avoid that? And that is just a huge issue there because many times folks think, well, mom or dad, or they're fine because there was this intent to return home thing mm-hmm. that the folks at DSS said that we could sign, and Medicaid's paying the bill, and all they had was the home basically anyway, so everything's fine. But they're not
mm-hmm.
because, you know, DMA is just waiting for the death, and then
right.
they're going to collect.
Right.
They have a requirement to
so
do that.
So there are ways, though, that could have been protected.
Yes, and that's, I think, what we've led up to now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ben, that then begins to define what kind of jurisdiction North Carolina happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
And some jurisdictions are what are known as expanded jurisdictions.
Right.
And they can look to any assets whatsoever, whether they're in a trust, whether they're in an LLC, whether or not they are in the probate estate.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is that in an expanded jurisdiction, assets with any kind of incident of ownership could be looked at to reimburse, you know, that jurisdiction for what it has paid the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina, however, is not an expanded jurisdiction. We are a probate-only jurisdiction.
Hmm.
And our state has laws that say that they can only look to the assets that are included in the probate estate. Those assets that are accounted for through the clerk of court when we die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And of course, if we take the home place and we make it a non-probate asset by placing it in a trust,
mm-hmm.
then of course it's not going to be in the probate estate and it would not be then subject to this lien recovery. And so this is many times what the client it instructs us to prepare
mm-hmm.
our documentation so as to make their home a non-probate asset so that there can be no reimbursement against it or no lien against the home at that time.
Okay, so it's also a non-countable asset at that point?
Well, it depends on what mechanism you use to make it not countable. Now, real briefly, if we're talking about the home place itself, you can make that property a non-countable asset by signing the intent to return home. Another way to make that property a non-countable asset is to structure it as a tenants in common property. That is by using a trust in order to hold the title of the property. Now, if we're talking about, let's say, the home place, and maybe there is a second property, maybe there's some family property, a farm or something that's been in the family for years. Well, if that property is held tenants in common, meaning, well, let's say, other brothers and sisters, it's already not countable. It's already not countable, but only because it's tenants in common, because you can't sign what's called an intent to return home on non-home place property.
Right.
Because it's not your home.
Right.
Right. So, but the same scenario would apply with that, Ben, in the event that you just sit back and relax and say the Medicaid's paying this, tenants in common.
They could still
property.
Take a lien against it.
They could take a lien against it and force a sale of your tenants in common interest in the property. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that interest would need to be placed in the appropriately drafted trust as well in order to avoid that. Now, let me just make a general comment about one thing with regard to this. This planning technique, and there are many things that we do, but this planning technique and everything we do, this is not hiding the ball.
Mm-hmm.
This is using the law that's on the books in completely showing the Division of Medical Assistance and DSS exactly everything we've done, and they're very happy with it. They like good planning.
All right, and we'll take a look at how that may differ if you're married and this is going on, too. In just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us. And Wes, you were saying that we were starting with a single person.
Yeah, we started talking about the single person having to apply for long-term care Medicaid.
Right.
And went through the scenario of, you know, protecting the home place, and then talked a little bit about maybe protecting any other real property interest you would have. And then let's kind of round that off with regard to the single person, and then in the event that this person has some savings or other countable assets, which would be really, you know, money in the bank or anything they could access, it wouldn't include a vehicle.
Right.
You can have a vehicle. It doesn't include, like, tangible personal items, jewelry, furniture, things in the home.
Or improvements to the property. Right?
That's correct, but that goes into the spend down.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. Says, let's say that this individual has $50,000 saved up. That's the nest egg that's left. And many times when our clients come in and they're at a situation where they have to go into long-term care, many times they've already spent down a lot of their money, maybe for in-home care, you know, these kind of things. But it's just to the point where the medical professionals are indicating that you really need a higher level of care now, because maybe you're just not provided that level of care you need in the home place. So we do see that a lot. So let's say that this individual, again, just has the $50,000, but we've got to get that down to under $2,000, Ben, in order to be eligible. Otherwise, we're just paying $5,000, $6,000 a month directly to the nursing home until it's gone. But we're not required to spend the money down in that way. There's a lot of other things we can do. For example, in the event that the home place needs any type of improvement, you know, this could be a new roof, it could be a new siding, it could be painting, it could be any kind of improvement. And as we all know, that can add up pretty quickly. Then that's an allowable spend down. In the event that, you know, we need a vehicle. Now, this vehicle needs to be reasonably used to take mom or dad, whoever it is, you know, to the doctor. Take them for the Sunday afternoon drives. You know, use it for them. But when we look at the option of either spending the money down on the long-term care directly or buying something or improving something like the home place. Well, obviously, if we can get our direct benefit out of our money by buying something, we'd rather do that.
Right.
Other items we look at is that we can prepay the funeral, which could be, of course, several thousand dollars. We could, depending on the circumstances, buy an interest in other real property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's gets to be somewhat aggressive sometimes, but sometimes the scenario that is presented to us by the client dictates that.
Right.
And we talk to our clients about that potentially, that potential option, because, you know, we don't want to hide the ball from them. They need to know all their options, and then mm-hmm. they can make their determination. So yeah.
Now, if that property or any of the properties or even the funeral had a payment,
right,
and had a mortgage maybe on the property, or the funeral plan, prepayment plan was a payment you pay over time, does the whole cost of that become erased?
What we want to do is we don't want to, like, go out and buy a prepaid funeral contract on a payment plan. We want to just pay it off.
Okay.
But you bring up a good point.
Any reduction of debt
right.
can be.
That's what I was just going to say.
Be,
right.
Any reduction of debt is an allowable use of the monies that mm-hmm. are left then.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. That basically where Wes is in the discussion is talking about things that we can do with the monies,
mm-hmm.
okay, that are left, be it $50,000, $100,000, whatever the amount of money is, that are allowable. One of the things that I think our listeners know is not allowable is to give it to the children
right.
or the grandchildren.
Right.
To, quote, give it away. That is not going to pass. Okay.
Or it's
going to
be subject to
it causes a sanction period.
It's going to be subject to
right.
a sanction period. There's
yeah.
going to be a penalty there, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many things that we can discuss that are allowable. One of them being, of course, the retirement of any debt.
Okay.
Okay.
Pay off the equity line, pay off the mortgage, pay off mm-hmm. credit card debt,
mm-hmm.
pay off debt. But it has to be debt of the actual Medicaid
recipient.
Applicant.
Right. Not somebody else's debt.
Not somebody else's debt.
Pay
in their name.
Kind of taxes
yeah.
that might be due. Of course, you know the word tax is going to come up somewhere.
Yeah.
And there it is. If there are any taxes to be paid, then those are allowable. You also are able to use any of this money to legitimately improve your existing real estate.
Okay.
You know.
All right. We'll get to more of that, too, coming up in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, again online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, taking your calls as well.
You can call me at 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Ben, there's a lot of, as our listeners are beginning to hear, what is happening is generally an inventory,
mm-hmm.
a synopsis, a gathering of assets relative to what our loved one happens to have that they are needing to protect, if you will, or analyze in order to be able to put all the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these assets are, of course, the real estate. Sometimes maybe more than one piece of real estate. They are the liquid assets,
mm-hmm.
the assets at the bank. Sometimes we see that our client has, you know, an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
They might have an annuity that would have value, or life insurance that has more than $5,000 of value. They might have more than one automobile, by the way. They might have, equipment, trailers, tractors, things mm-hmm. of this nature. And so all of these things have got to be inventoried, if you will, looked at, and then analyzed. And then, of course, you know, let's get the ducks in a row
right.
and see what, if anything, we're able to provide benefit to this particular client. Now, we've skipped over, and next week, we're running out of time this week, but next week I really would like to talk about, because we run into this very frequently, Ben, you know, we don't go to a nursing home just because we say, well, hey, it's time for me to go to a nursing home. I'd like to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is a document signed by our medical providers known as an FL2, and our doctors must certify that in their opinion, they think we are in need of a skilled level of care.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes our loved ones are at home. They are suffering from dementia, from Alzheimer's, from some sort of elder, getting older process. I mean, sometimes, Bill, to be honest with you, they're not so old.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, I have a client right now who has a wife in her 50s,
mm-hmm.
who is extremely confused. And has been diagnosed with early Alzheimer's, but is deteriorating very, very quickly and at an incredibly young age.
Mm-hmm.
There are clients with disease processes such as, you know, the Lou Gehrig's disease or multiple sclerosis, these types of diseases that can last for a long time but can be extremely debilitating and progressive. And so Wes and I many times find ourselves talking to the physicians, having the families consult with the physicians so that we are able to slowly but surely put all of the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is not just an automatic the conclusion that we can make that someone would be accepted into a skilled care facility, okay, under the Medicaid mm-hmm. law,
right?
Just because the family is of the opinion that now is the time. There
right.
does have to be a medical certification on that.
And also some facilities limit the number of Medicaid beds.
Absolutely. And the other side of the coin of this scenario is the family who said to themselves, my mom or dad will never ever go to a nursing home. We
mm-hmm.
have family. We will be able to take care of them in the home. And they do take care of them in the home for a long, long time.
Right.
But finally, as Wes alluded to earlier, the circumstances, the medical conditions become such that the doctor turns to the family and insists that they have a different level of care.
That's why early planning takes care of a lot of these ills. So if you want to get involved in that early planning, you can call for that first appointment as well and consult with the folks at Harbell and Collins. Call them at 252-726-9050.